Penguin Random House Audio presents Love You Hard, a memoir of marriage, brain injury, and reinventing love. This is the author, Abby Maslin. To Jack, whose light illuminates us all. Prologue, July 2005. It begins with a t-shirt. In the clamor of the night, warm bodies gather close to the bar, and hips collide with carelessness as beads of sweat collect behind my knees. From a dozen yards away, a gentle wind stirs the Patuxent River. This is summer in southern Maryland. Warm and sticky, but touched by the merciful breeze of the Chesapeake Bay and the many rivers that feed into it. It's air that feels like magic, a warm breath on the cheek or a kiss on the hand. As I take in the scene before me, a flash of blue catches my eye. I'm drawn in by the tepid hue. Not royal, not navy, but calm, cool, like the ocean. Someone's $7 Hanes t-shirt, most likely, but still, I feel compelled to get a better look. I can't see much of the man who's wearing it. He is inching his way forward in a throng of intoxicated bargoers, and his face reveals itself for only a moment before being swallowed by the commotion of the crowd. He's taller than I am, anyway. At my height of 5'2", my eyes are just level with the simple pocket across his chest. Claire, do you see that guy there? I nudge my best friend beside me, lifting my chin in his direction. The words enter and exit my mouth before my brain has a chance to stop myself. Claire gives me a look of temporary puzzlement and then pulls my arm in his direction. I didn't come to this bar tonight with the intention of meeting anyone. In fact, Claire had to drag me here nearly against my will. After a year of heart-shredding disappointment, first with the ending of my first real relationship, and then with the dramatic and ugly conclusion to a make-myself-feel-better fling, I had recently declared a hiatus from the opposite sex. But, having abandoned that plan momentarily, Claire and I grab our drinks, two flimsy plastic cups containing the Tiki Bar's signature drink, a syrupy pink concoction known as the Mai Tai, and edge ourselves closer to the boy I'm straining to get a better look at. He stands, leaning against a wooden bench, talking to a friend. With unimagined clarity, I hear my own voice. Abby. Your life will not be the same if you don't talk to this man. I don't believe in love at first sight. The idea of something so tidy and wildly convenient in this messy, inconvenient real world seems implausible. However, I'm overcome by something outside my control. Whatever it is, a tug from the gut, a hormone-induced trance, I have no reason to trust it. At 22 years of age, I know very little about love. All I'm really familiar with is the hookup culture around me, a world where disconnection and disinterest are key. Men puff up their chests, pretend to be brave and cool and incapable of softness. Women mirror in response, pretend to be distant and uninterested and incapable of giving a shit. It's all a farce, one I've never been very good at. But this young man strikes me as an outlier. His cocoa-colored eyes smile as he laughs in conversation. He runs his hand through his thick golden brown hair, unaware of his handsomeness. His eyes remain fixed to his friend, not darting around the bar in search of those who might be checking him out, or attempting to check out anyone else. He exudes sincerity, comfort, an unwillingness to play the very game I've grown to hate. And so I do something I've rarely done in the past. I trust myself. I keep walking in his direction. Later, I'll choose to describe this night as magical. Fated, even. It's far more romantic than acknowledging the truth. That TC and I met by chance, and that everything that happened after was of our own making. Two 22-year-olds from the same hometown, who, by some unusual circumstance, had never crossed paths before. I recognized TC's name the moment he said it. He was the good friend of one of my good friends, Lizzie, who had also been a college roommate. I don't want to get married, I remember Lizzie saying 2 years earlier. But if I did, I'd want to marry my friend TC. He's literally the best guy I know. She'd meant it platonically, a means of emphasizing both her disinterest in marriage and her high opinion of TC. But I mulled over her words again that night, as if I were listening for the first time. It was obvious right away there was merit to her assessment. TC was kind. He listened in a way I'd never before seen a boy, or a man, listen. As I told him my story, that I'd been transplanted to St. Mary's County 5 years earlier, a radical and unwanted shift after a childhood in sunny Arizona, and that in a matter of weeks I'd be moving again, up north to Philadelphia, where I was starting graduate school. He nodded with deep attention, never pausing to break eye contact. He too had a story to share. A Maryland transplant himself, by way of West Virginia, he'd graduated from Bucknell University just a month earlier. In a few days, he'd start a new job as a research scientist at a local marine lab. Our different paths lie outlined in the looming future, the finer edges still waiting to make themselves known. We never imagined we'd fall into each other so quickly, agreeing wordlessly to throw our efforts into a 2-year long-distance relationship. Philadelphia to Maryland, then Philadelphia to North Carolina, when TC started graduate school at Duke. Or, then another 2 years after that, we'd find ourselves standing on the bank of the St. Mary's River, under the shade of a blooming pear tree, agreeing to belong to each other, in plenty and in want, in sickness and in health, in failure and in triumph. As it always is, most everything was still unknown. There was only this. We'd found each other and began walking in the same direction. We never anticipated where that path would lead us. Part 1. Faith is the bird that feels the light and sings when the dawn is still dark. Rabindranath Tagore. Chapter 1. August 2012. If a love story can be bigger than two people, if it can also consume the air those people breathe, the trees that produce the oxygen, and the city sidewalks traveled by the footsteps that merge two lives into one, it's fair to say that my love for TC is bigger than us both. It is, at the very least, as big as Washington, D.C., the city in which we've built our life together. And this is where it begins. In the northeast section of the city, on the concrete stoop of our 100-year-old, red-brick apartment building, knees pulled to my chest, my fingers trembling around the pink silicone of my iPhone case, the phone I have just used to dial 911. Or maybe this is where it ends. It doesn't matter anymore, really. Beginnings and endings are one and the same. Harsh, unplanned delineations marking the passage of one life chapter to another. The before, the after, and the giant screaming gape between. The mid-morning sun warms my face as I look out at the Capitol Hill sidewalk just beyond our building's wrought iron fence. And even though it's Saturday, my attention turns to the corner, half expecting to see TC walking the last footsteps of his evening commute, his tanned face and warm brown eyes smiling outward from a sea of happy families and young professionals. But he doesn't come. Instead, I scratch at my ankles, willing the pesky mosquitoes to vacate the premises so that I can continue my rapid descent into shock without further bloodshed. However, in the grand tradition of sweltering mid-Atlantic summers, the mosquitoes show little consideration. They buzz about my bare calves, landing and biting every few seconds, ignoring my hand waves and persistent scratching. I suppose a woman in shock is no different than any other warm-blooded body they might choose to feed upon. The policeman who's responded to my call keeps his distance from me, maintaining his post on the sidewalk while he scribbles unknown notes on a tiny pad. I scratch at a fresh bite on my ankle as I watch him work. Is this a joke? I wonder. My husband is missing. What the hell is a single cop on a bicycle going to do about it?
Sample complete. Ready to continue?